This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Yusuf in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We are projecting, under the optimistic scenario, there would be just over 40,000 deaths by November. And this picks up perhaps to around 45, 48,000 deaths in the pessimistic scenario.
That is as South African scientists on dire projections for the country's coronavirus outbreak. Details coming up also. Burundians are voting for a new president today. In Lesotho, a new prime minister takes the reins of power. And in Southern Africa, leaders are meeting to discuss the growing Islamist insurgency in northern Mozambique. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Burundians went to the polls today in the first presidential vote since the violent election of President Pierre Nkurunziza to a third term 5 years ago. And Nkurunziza is not seeking another term, but fears of repression remain. VOA Central Africa Service journalist Frederick Nkundikiji reports that social media sites have been cut and there are no international observers. Nkundikiji spoke to VOA's Jason Patinkin in Washington.
Today, as you know, is May 20th and elections are going on in Burundi. There were some issues initially where journalists were not allowed to take photos, but ultimately they've been given the permission to do that. The other thing is the internet is not working, you know, across the country. And this was intentional. I believe the National Election Commission is the one who ordered that to avoid that, you know, people on social media exchange rumors, but also this obviously complicates the whole situation. People who are in other countries cannot really know what is really going on at this point.
Can you talk a bit about who are the top candidates and, you know, what does the field look like for president right now?
There are seven contenders, presidential candidates, including the ruling party candidate who was also the secretary general of the ruling party, CNDD-FDD. There is also Agathon Rwasa, who's the chairperson of CNL party. And we have Yupona party. We have two independent candidates. We have Frodebu. We have a coalition of parties, Kira Burundi. Final result going to be June 4th, whereas the partial results will be announced on May 25th and 26th.
The last election in Burundi was extremely controversial, extremely violent. Journalists were kicked out of the country. Hundreds of people were killed in the aftermath. There was a coup attempt. There was a violence crackdown. The sitting president, Pierre Nkurunziza, accused of holding on to power with an extra term. Even Voice of America was kicked out of the country. Given that climate last time, is there a real climate where a free and fair election can even take place right now in Burundi?
Obviously, if you compare elections in 2015 and elections today, there is a huge difference. As you said it, elections in 2015 were marked by a lot of violence, killings, people fleeing the country. Today, elections are taking place in a peaceful environment. And depending on which side you talk to, some people will tell you that these elections would be fair and democratic, while others will say that it's not all that sure, given that we don't even have international observers. There are, at this point, 40 organizations which are overseeing the elections, local organizations. But as far as we know, the international organizations are concerned, we don't know any of those organizations which used to send people to Burundi, observers to Burundi.
An internet shutdown, this has been a tool used by many repressive governments around the world during elections or tense times. Obviously, that cuts off information from sharing within the country and information sharing to the outside world. Given this, what does this indicate about the potential fairness of this election if the internet has apparently been cut?
We don't know the reason why the government went ahead with this decision, although some 30 international organizations had written to the government urging it to really, you know, let the internet free during these election days. But for some reason, I talked to one of the chairperson of organizations that oversee the elections, and he told me that internet is down and no communication at all.
That was VOA Central Africa Service journalist Frederick Nkundukiji speaking with VOA's Jason Patinkin. Lesotho's finance minister, Mokisi Majoro, is now the country's prime minister. AFP reports that Majoro was sworn in today after the resignation of Thomas Tambane, who quit amid allegations that he conspired to kill his estranged wife. The country was plunged into crisis after the June 2017 killing. Pressure built relentlessly for the 80-year-old prime minister to step down. His resignation yesterday cleared the way for the 58-year-old Majoro, a seasoned economist, to take the reins. Majoro previously worked as an executive director of the International Monetary Fund. At a swearing-in ceremony at the Royal Palace, he wore a face mask as a precaution against the coronavirus, vowed to usher a new version of leadership and gain the people's trust. He will serve out Tambane's remaining term before the next round of elections in 2022. South Africa's government has bowed to pressure to release the scientific modeling on which it based its decision to continue enforcing what's now almost 60 days of lockdown. COVID-19 has so far infected about 17,000 people and killed 312, making it the country in Africa's hardest hit by the pandemic. Many citizens and opposition parties want an immediate end to the regulations that have been in place to try to slow the spread of the coronavirus. But the latest information from scientists reveals that this would probably be premature. Darren Taylor reports.
The presentation by one of the government's lead scientific modelers is likely to quiet some of the angry voices that have been demanding an end to South Africa's long lockdown. The emergency regulations are indeed strangling the economy and causing immense suffering. Dr. Sheetal Silal says even if citizens maintain measures such as social distancing and wearing masks, the nation faces a grim future.
We are projecting, under the optimistic scenario, there would be just over 40,000 deaths by November. And this picks up perhaps to around 48,000 deaths in the pessimistic scenario.
The scientists predict about 1 million infections by the end of the year. According to their modeling, there won't be enough healthcare for all the casualties.
Whether we are going to follow the optimistic trajectory of the epidemic or the pessimistic trajectory of the epidemic, the threshold of ICU beds are projected to be exceeded. And they're projected to be exceeded quite early on in the epidemic, the optimistic projections being in July or just the start of July, and the pessimistic predictions in June.
At this stage, South Africa has only 4,000 ICU beds. But health economists say even if the country did have the tens of thousands required to treat COVID-19 patients, it would not have the ventilators or the healthcare workers needed to save their lives. The projections show that the expected flood of coronavirus cases is going to cause an unprecedented health crisis in South Africa, with people admitted to hospitals with other conditions also likely to suffer and perhaps die. Sital says there simply won't be capacity to treat all patients.
When ICU bed threshold is exceeded, those requiring but not getting an ICU bed will be occupying a general hospital bed or a non-ICU bed. So what we can expect actually is that the general bed threshold can be exceeded quite a bit early on in the epidemic.
The scientist emphasizes her team's modeling is not set in stone.
We are in the middle of May right now, and so COVID-19 has only been around in the world for 4.5 months. And here we are trying to make projections on the entire span of the epidemic for the next 6 to 8 months. So there's considerable uncertainty in how the epidemic is going to fully play out. we do acknowledge that this particular plot of what will happen in the next 6 to 8 months is going to be updated and most likely going to be changing with every update.
Whether that change is for the better is up to South Africans, says the government. The scientists say lives will be saved and infections minimized if citizens heed methods proven to decrease the possibility of infection, and if the state scales up testing and health systems as much as possible. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
As countries began easing COVID-19 lockdowns, Nigeria has extended its restrictions by 2 weeks. Critics say the move will hit the poor and the economy hard. Reporter Gifta Gariga from Abuja has the details.
On Monday, the government announced that the gradual easing of the lockdown, which started on May 4, will continue with stricter enforcement and persuasion measures. During the daily briefing of the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19, the Secretary to the Government of the Federation, Boss Mustafa, emphasized that the plan is expected to enable all the sectors of the economy prepare for reopening in the coming weeks. Ramatu Tijani Aliyu is the Minister of State in Abuja. Speaking via a messaging app, she says the action is necessary to save lives by reducing the spread of the virus.
I find it very appropriate and essential. We cannot definitely say that the spread has been totally contained or that the curve has flattened. Ending the restrictions now can reverse the gains we have made so far. It is a hard decision, though. But that is what responsible governance is all about.
Easing restrictions comes as Nigeria's rate of confirmed cases is on the rise. The informal sector has been hit hardest during the lockdown, with prices of food jumping up to 50%. A chieftain of the ruling party, Garus Gululu, says the extension will worsen difficult times for many poor Nigerians.
The masses are suffering because they don't have food. 75% of Nigerians is when they go out before they could be able to celebrate. Let them allow people to wear their mask as the other countries are doing, like America.
The president of Team Nigeria for Change, Otumba Besman Nze, described the extension as a necessity in the public's best interest.
It's only the nation that is filled with people who are alive that will stand as a nation. And essentially, we record what America, Italy, Spain recorded with this COVID. There won't be a nation called Nigeria anymore because it will be so devastating. And we do not have the infrastructure. We don't have the facilities to even contain an epidemic.
He advised the government to review the process of sharing aid to ensure it gets to the average Nigerian. The renewed measures by the government include a ban on interstate travel, a requirement to use face masks, and an 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew. Restrictions on large social and religious gatherings will remain in place. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. Burundians are voting for a new president today. In Lesotho, a new prime minister takes the reins of power. And in Southern Africa, leaders are meeting to discuss their growing Islamist insurgency in northern Mozambique. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Cameroon is marking its national day today under coronavirus restrictions and amid ongoing clashes between the military and Anglophone separatists. President Paul Biya has spoken publicly for the first time about the pandemic. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's President Paul Biya broke his silence on the coronavirus pandemic Tuesday night in a televised address to mark the country's national day. Biya's 2 months' absence and lack of commenting in public on the pandemic had raised speculation about his health. The 87-year-old, who has ruled Cameroon since 1982, is known for his frequent travels overseas that spark criticism. In a live broadcast on state television, he said there would be no festive events or military parades to celebrate this year as the number of COVID-19 victims continues to rise.
Most of you have understood that it is necessary to put aside political squabbles and adopt a common front in the face of the insidious danger posed by COVID-19.
Instead of public gatherings to mark their independence, Bia called on Cameroonians to follow social distancing guidelines and promote national unity. He made no mention of the ongoing separatist conflict in Western Cameroon that the UN says has cost more than 3,200 lives and displaced more than half a million people. Cameroon's military raised flags on public buildings Wednesday to mark the anniversary of a 1972 referendum for a unified state instead of the federal system agreed to when the country first gained independence. Cameroon's Anglophone rebels refused to honor National Day, saying the referendum was unjust because it allowed the French-speaking majority to rule over them. Ruling party supporter Enoch Tanjong voted on the referendum and says the rebels should stop fighting and work for peace in the English-speaking regions.
They should lay down their arms and come and be integrated in the economic progress of the country. Those who think that we should go and found another country are completely wrong. The world is looking forward to having countries come together, and that should be what should guide us.
Cameroon's military said clashes with rebels this week killed at least six people, where separatists had called for a lockdown and vowed that National Day would not be observed. The rebels claimed on social media to have abducted at least nine people they said were watching National Day TV programs. Their claim could not be independently confirmed. Dorothy Njema is a Bia supporter but says the over-centralization of power by the central government in Yaoundé was provoking the separatists.
Over the years, people have had second thoughts about whether it is the best arrangement to have an over-centralized system. But I'm not sure that the way that some people have gone about it is the best. I would go more for an effectively decentralized system.
The conflict started in 2016 when protests by English-speaking teachers and lawyers against the dominance of French-speaking Cameroonians led some to take up arms. Cameroon's military declared war on the rebels, who have been fighting since 2017 to create an independent English-speaking state. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Kenyan authorities have forcibly evicted more than 7,000 people from land in Nairobi slums over the last month, defying a court order. Authorities say they demolished homes because they were built on public land. Critics say mass evictions during a pandemic are inhumane and could further spread the coronavirus, as Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
42-year-old Daniel Ndungu saw the three tractors coming before his home was demolished last week. We saw police officers coming into the area. They blocked the road and left the only one used by tractors. Ndungu says, at around 9, they started demolition. They didn't care whether there were children in the house or anything else. They began demolition, he says. Defying a court order, authorities on Friday forcibly evicted Ndungu's family and other Nairobi slum dwellers, making them homeless in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. Ndungu says he will stay here in the cold and wait. Now, there is nowhere to go, he says. Even if I want to move to a new place, there's no place to move to, and I have no money. Moving to a new place, people won't accept you because they will say you have coronavirus. Others who could moved into the crowded dwellings of friends and relatives. The evictions which started in April, left over 5,000 people homeless earlier this month in Nairobi's Kariobangi neighborhood. The state-run Nairobi City Water and Sewerage Company claims ownership of the land and says the families have been occupying it illegally since 2008.
People are told this in advance. You are actually sitting on public land. There's a project that is terminating here. We may be able to, you know, probably open up and then pump sewage in this direction. People know this, but then either people don't move or they just continue staying there.
37-year-old Bucha Hussein Wako says he has government receipts showing he owns the land he was forced from. But public land is too often sold illegally in Kenya, leaving those who were cheated out of their money, like Wako, also homeless. They demolished our home and poor people's homes. I slept in the cold for 2 days, and there is a coronavirus pandemic, Wako says. They told us to go back home when we demonstrated against the demolition. They disrupted it and tear gassed us, he says. A small riot erupted earlier this month as the evicted clashed with police in Kariobangi and set fire to cars and tires. A Kenyan High Court had earlier ordered a halt to further demolitions until a petition by residents is heard in June. But for thousands of Kenyans already left homeless, those still being evicted, there's little hope for justice. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Botswana is investigating the mysterious deaths of 56 elephants in the last 2 months. Authorities have ruled out poaching, as all carcasses were found intact. Mokandisi Dube reports from the capital, Habrone.
The country's Minister of Environment, Natural Resources, Conservation and Tourism says 12 elephants were found dead last week in villages in the Okavango Delta Panhandle. In March, 44 animals died, but wildlife officials have ruled out poaching in the separate incidents. Wildlife officer Dimakazo Ntsebe downplayed the possibility of farmers poisoning the elephants who tend to eat and stomp on crops. A local farmer says it is difficult to know the cause of death, but says elephants are a constant menace.
Farmers had a good harvest this year, but they constantly face problems with the encroaching animals. Although it is a rare occurrence, it might be something else, but you'll have to wait and see the investigations.
Local conservationist Ive Mebs says the animals could have died of natural causes.
Because it is also possible that it is a natural phenomenon from the disease anthrax, which occurs in the Botswana occasionally, especially after good rain season or after severe drought. Poisoning is not something common up that way, but I think we should once more wait for the pathology from the Department of Wildlife and National Parks to find out whether this is indeed poison or it might be, as I say, a natural anthrax phenomenon.
Fellow conservationist Neil Feet says if the cause of death was poisoning, other species could be dying as well.
I wonder why we haven't had reports of other species also dying off. If elephants are eating the poison, then it surely means that other things would also be eating it.
The public has been urged against consuming meat from the dead carcasses. Botswana has the largest elephant population in Africa, numbering over 130,000 animals. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyus Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.